Christina Bryan Fitzgibbons, a genetic and family investigator.
And I'm Jody Klugman-Rabb, a licensed marriage and family therapist and licensed professional clinical counselor. Welcome to Sex, Lies, and the Truth. Julie was raised in a nice Irish Catholic family who knew from an early age she was adopted. But when it came time to search for biological parents, relationships started changing at home, and the story of who she was had also begun to change.
I'm Julie Ryan McHugh, and I'm a domestic adoptee, but I also happen to be an identical twin, which is one of the secrets of the book that I've just written, Twice a Daughter, A Search for Identity and Belonging. My twin sister and I were adopted together at 3 weeks old through Catholic Charities. And like many adoptees, we knew we were adopted. Our parents told us at a very young age. And every once in a while, we would have little checking in sessions with them. And my parents would be nervous. And my sister and I would be nervous because we knew what they were going to say. And that was, you know, if you ever want to research your adoption, we're here to support you. Just let us know. And we had a big, happy family that we grew up with. My sister and I are the oldest, so twins at the oldest. My parents had trouble having a pregnancy, so they waited 5 years before they finally got the call from Catholic Charities to come pick up my sister and I from St. Vincent's Orphanage in Chicago. And then I have a brother that's 2 years younger who's also adopted. And then, like so many adoptive parents' stories, my parents had 3 biological children of their own. So we were a very blended family. And I would say I never felt any difference between how my parents treated us versus the younger kids. And likewise, they didn't treat us any differently. In fact, I would say when you have 2 older sisters that look alike and are have a tendency to be bossy, I think they were a little afraid of us. And so we had a fun Irish Catholic family growing up with the knowledge that we were adopted. And then at 48 years old, I was sent for a breast biopsy. And that highlighted to my sister and I that we needed to get at our family medical history and background. But because we're from adopted in a closed adoption, in 1959, we had literally no information about our background. I did find out later that my birth father wore glasses and my mom was in good health at the time of her pregnancy. So literally, the only information passed on through Catholic Charities was that. Not much to go on, and certainly a lot of work to do.
One might think asking the adoption agencies for information would be the hardest part since they are so thrifty with information. And yet the real challenge often comes up with the parents, whether biological or adopted.
So the first thing that my sister and I had to do was call my parents and ask for our adoption papers. They had never given them to us, which I'm not sure why. I guess they thought that we would always ask if we needed them, but I also secretly think they didn't want us to ever search, even though they expressed their support. I also think that they kept the adoption papers because they would know when we were going to search, because we would have to ask for them. So at 48 years old, we tried to figure out what was the right search path. And not having anybody that I knew that was adopted that had gone through this, in 2010, we were figuring it out.
Some NPEs are easily able to find their information because they are savvy with databases or get lucky with relatives uploading their DNA to provide easy matches. There's also the option to ask relatives for information. While adoptees may also get lucky with matches, it can be harder for them since the closed adoptions are the typical roadblocks preventing them from learning the basic information about themselves non-adoptees take for granted.
The internet was pretty young. We landed on a search agency in Texas, which I talk about in the book, paid them a hefty fee. They claimed to have been supported by Oprah. And they did do a rudimentary job of trying to get at some information. But it was very clear early on that one of the lies on our birth record is that our birth mother used an alias. So they stopped returning my phone calls and we had to figure out another route. I ended up making contact with a private investigator that I got connected through Ancestry.com. They have a little feature called Hire the Expert. And it turns out that Ray, the history cop, was not only a genealogist, but he was a retired detective. So my sister and I met with him, and he quickly told us, without your birth mother's real name, I can't help you. But what he did do was he turned us on to the Confidential Intermediary Service of Illinois, a brand new program in 2010. Illinois adoption laws were changing at that time. And I filed the paperwork on behalf of my sister and I, and was given a confidential intermediary assigned by a judge. And that intermediary was able to open our sealed records. And in the sealed records was our birth mother's real name. So we got lucky. The intermediary contacted our birth mother, and that didn't go well. She was one of those birth mothers that had kept a secret her entire life. She had never told anybody.
If you're a new listener, you would be helped to go back to some of our previous episodes and hear the frequent tales of mothers who kept secrets, never expecting to have them see the light of day. Because after all, who ever knew that commercial DNA tests would be a thing? Even so, we have explored with many guests the reasons people keep secrets, especially women. They often include pressure to adhere to social norms or risk certain alienation from family and friends, a type of shunning from the community which often spelled life and death disaster for women prior to the 21st century. I'd like to say it was even prior to the 1970s and 1980s, but if that were true, my mother would have had a different experience.
She never told her family. She was from a very large family. She feared being disowned by her family. She had told one girlfriend, and she and that girlfriend took a train to Chicago from a faraway state and moved into a woman's home. And she signed up with Catholic Charities to place my sister and I for adoption. And one of the interesting things that we found as a result of our research was that a clipping magically appeared in public records. And on the clipping was our birth names. And I didn't even know I had a birth name. My parents had never mentioned it. And we were both surprised that my twin and I both had similar names. My birth mom had named us Anne Marie and Mary Ann. And then the last name was her alias. So we often wondered, you know, why the name reversal? What is that about? Why not come up with two unique names? Certainly, Anne and Mary are two very revered characters in the biblical stories. So that made sense, but we always wondered what that was.
Julie finally made contact with her birth mother, who confessed the name reversal was a reaction to not knowing she was pregnant with twins until she delivered them.
Our birth mother had a lot of trouble coming to grips with being found. And she had been married for 30 years and never told her husband. So one of the obstacles that she faced was revealing that to him. And that took many, many months. In the meantime, before she did disclose this to him, she took out a post office box and we communicated through our intermediary through this post office box, exchanging letters and pictures. And that went on for months. And finally, the intermediary said, we're at the end of the year, so she's going to have to decide whether she wants contact or not. Fingers crossed, we all filed all the right paperwork. And in the fall of 2011, we actually met. And the road was wonderful for a while. She unfortunately had a hard time revealing the truth about her story to her family. So we did not end up meeting any of her brothers and sisters or any other family members for quite a while. And my sister and I were patient with her as she came to grips with her shame of having been an unwed mother and having this illegitimate pregnancy and hiding it and lying for many years about not being a mother.
Unfortunately, that hard-won connection and information exchange was soon met with what inevitably plagues the MPE discovery at some point: lies. When Julie asked about her birth father, things started to change.
I asked her in our first conversation for my birth father's name. One of the things that was common practice back in the 1950s and 60s, because there were so many babies available for adoption, is that to facilitate all those adoptions, the birth father's name was left off the original birth record. So not only on my birth record does it have my birth mother's alias, it also has, in the space where my birth father's name should be, the words "legally omitted." So another little lie that we had to track down. And so the way to do that was I asked my birth mother what his name was, and she hesitated in spelling it and coming up with it, which made me wonder, did she not really remember his name? Was there trauma associated with our births? And then I also wondered, was she giving me the right name? And I waited for a while to find the truth about that.
Julie went back through the intermediary that had helped find her mother, and a year's worth of time and money provided many candidates, but nothing stuck. In the meantime, Julie's health issues were continuing, making it important to know what the other half of her medical information was.
So about 6 months passed, and we're now in 2014, so the search is going on almost 5 years. And I had an epiphany. I was out in Montana on a ski vacation with my family, and there were animal tracks around the cabin. And we vacationed a lot out in Montana. And I remember thinking when I saw those animal tracks, I wonder what that is. And normally when you see animal tracks or scat, you look up in a guidebook. And I thought to myself, that's the answer. If you want to find somebody, you need to go to a guidebook. You need to go to the actual environment in which you find the tracks. So I went on a website and went on the genealogy website, and I found one genealogist in the town that my birth parents had met and where my sister and I were conceived. And I contacted that genealogist, and as luck would happen, she was an adoptee. And because she understood the urgency of my cause with my health issues and my situation, she got right on it. And she was like a little detective, because she came back to me in about 3 weeks and said, "You don't have the right name. This is not the guy. I can't find anything about this guy. But I've gone back to the city records, and I had the researcher pull all the names that began with S, and I think I found somebody that is probably your birth dad. But you're going to have to write him a letter, and you probably should ask for a DNA test just to make sure that we found the right guy." So I started doing research online about this guy and his family, and if this was the right guy, I was going to have a new brother and a new sister, and both of them lived within a 20-minute drive of my house. We drafted a letter with help of our social workers and the confidential intermediary, and sent a letter off to him. And I tracked it with the post office, so I knew when he got it. I didn't know who signed for it, so that was interesting. I wondered if it was his second wife or if he signed for it. And within a week's time, I had a response in the same manner. Post office, I had a letter for me I had to sign for, and inside the package was a letter from my birth father with all my medical history.
Yet nowhere in the letter would he admit to being her father. He kind of vacillated between maybe, maybe not. Julie kept thinking, well, if you are, then there are some serious female health issues in your family to be aware of. Discussing it with her sister, Julie decided to take a break from it. And then another surprise happened.
And all of a sudden, I went for a walk and I came back and said, I'm going to take the summer off and give this a new look in the fall. I need a break. And the phone rang and it was my brother. My birth father had told him and my half sister that many years ago he'd had a relationship with a coworker, and there's this kook out there, meaning me, who wants DNA and all sorts of information. And my brother was asking what I wanted, basically. So we ended up having about an hour and a half conversation. And as many conversations go, we ended up with, who do you know? Where do you live? What did you do? And we found, which I'm not going to reveal, an astounding connection between us that changed the story. And subsequent to the conversation, he and I went for DNA testing in the lab, and we matched.
There's quite a surprise connection here that Julie reveals in her book, Twice a Daughter. We decided to keep the integrity of that surprise by not revealing it on the podcast.
One of the things I didn't talk about as I shared this narrative is my relationship with my adoptive parents. Not only was I having these health issues ongoing, I was having problems with my adoptive mom. She, when I came to them and asked for my adoption papers, she was not happy. And a rift developed between us because I couldn't understand why she wouldn't support my efforts to find my medical history. I wasn't looking to recycle them as parents. I had a good relationship with them. And I felt that she should put whatever reservations she had aside for that particular reason. And we didn't patch it up. I used to talk to her every day about my kids or things going on with the family, my father's health. And by the end of the search, when I found my birth father, we were speaking, but we were not warm and fuzzy. But because of the revelation about my connection with my half-brother, all of that turned around. The whole family rallied around all this information. And one of the closing scenes in the book is all of us meeting for dinner together and toasting to all the family in our lives. And as I was writing this memoir, I was writing it for myself to tell my story because of all the crazy twists and turns.
What Julie didn't realize as she was searching for her family, she was finding herself as well. Previously unconscious thoughts and feelings about being an adoptee were surfacing, which helped her write her memoir. She quickly learned writing her story wasn't just helpful for her own processing, but it would be helpful for other adoptees in learning how to use search angels.
You may need a search agency. You may need a search angel. You may need your adoption agency to help you. You may need an intermediary. You may need a PI. And if you're lucky, you can use DNA to help you solve your story. There's so many tools for adoptees to use to find and connect with their birth relatives. Some of them work for everybody. Some of them don't. In my case, I needed absolutely everything to get to the end of the story. And one of the things that happened in the course of my search was I became involved in an adoption support group. And that group was offered through Catholic Charities. We met quarterly. In the group were birth parents, adoptees, their loved ones, and adoptive family members. And because I went to those regular meetings and learned other people's search stories and shared their joys and their disappointments, I understood their perspectives. And I believe that experience with the social worker in that group helped inform my story and helped me add depth to the character of my birth mother and my adoptive mother and myself. And so one of the final goals of the book was this experience of understanding everyone's perspective and walking in their shoes and having forgiveness. We're all very imperfect people. Certainly There's a lot of joy in the adoption experience, but there's also a lot of loss. A lot of adoptive parents have experienced pregnancy loss, which facilitates them wanting to adopt. Birth parents lose the experience of parenting their child, and adoptees lose their identity.
I bet that newfound perspective helped Julie navigate the challenges of the identity crisis that comes with adoptions and MPE. We learn about ourselves from the groups we affiliate with and find meaning in. Thankfully, one of the affiliations was her new birth siblings.
I text or talk with my brother and sister every week. My brother has an adopted child, which really deepens our relationship. They had a lot of empathy for what I was going through, trying to find my birth family. They had been to China to research their daughter's family. So their empathy for my situation and their acceptance. You know, one of the things that we fear as adoptees is, how will we be treated and what are we going to find on the other side of this thing, which is our adoption search? And they couldn't have made it any easier. Now, it wasn't a complete happy ending. My birth father and I never met. That was definitely a sore point between my siblings and their father, the father that we share, that never happened. And, you know, it's just one of the things that happens. You know, most adoptees are not welcomed completely into their new families, but this one, I definitely was. And when you read the book and you see the connection to my adoptive family, it's no wonder that we have become one big happy family on this side of the family.
Remember her birth mother's hesitancy to open up to her family about Julie and her sister? With an MPE discovery, you can't wait too long or the search comes to you, usually in the form of a DNA database.
So my birth mother was very slow in telling her family. And because I was always on Ancestry and always on 23andMe, trying to find matches, trying to build my genealogical tree, one day I got a notice and I went on and wow, two first cousins. And I knew who they were because I'd been going through family history with my birth mom. And because she hadn't told her family, I had the dilemma of, do I reach out to them or not? Do I risk a little rift with her because she's just not ready or not? And I didn't have to wait very long for that because they reached out to me and said, we know you are our cousin and we would like to meet you. And so 2 years ago, we met our two first cousins and have had a great email relationship. They live out of state. And last week, my book, Twice a Daughter, launched. And one of these first cousins had moved to Florida, which is where I spend a lot of time because I have family down there. And she and her sister came to my book launch. So we have a great picture of the three of us holding the book. And I feel like it was just one of those full circle moments where researching your story ends up with so much joy that we're just beaming in the picture. It's just really a great shot. So the book is my story, but it's also a story that will hopefully help other adoptees get the nerve to try all these various different tools. And another goal that I wrote the book is to provide information about the adoption triangle. So many adoptees don't understand their birth parents, or their adoptive parents don't understand the adoptee's needs.
If you're wondering what happened with Julie's health, you'll have to read the book. It's woven throughout the book expertly, starting with a biopsy in the opening chapter. The end of the book ties together the search for health information, changing family relationships, changing identity, and how help from strangers like a search angel and a judge made it all possible. So to let you off the hook just a little, we're happy to say Julie is healthy and very happy now.
You know, as we look back on this year that we've had with COVID, we all harbor so much in our bodies as a result of stress. And I have to think that my health situation for that 5-6 years, as precarious as it was, it all turned out to be not much. And maybe it was the vehicle for me to have to look for my personal story. It also benefited my twin, who never had any health issues. I joked with her all the time that I'm the guinea pig. Gratefully, we are both very healthy. She lives a mile away from me. So my relationship with her is probably one of the reasons I was able to get through the very deep, dark moments of my search journey. There was a lot of rejection and loss.
We asked Julie to talk about rejection since it's pervasive to the MPE experience.
It was so helpful to have somebody that I didn't have to explain what I was feeling. She knew, and she was feeling it too, maybe not as deeply because I was the searcher, but to know that somebody understands you and understands what you're going through was very helpful. But it's also what those adoption support group meetings are all about, that sense of community, the comfort of being able to share your story, know that other people in the room have walked in your shoes and are cheering for you to have a different outcome, perhaps, than they did. And I think every adoptee, as they go through their search, needs to have an advocate, a social worker, a friend, someone that's gone through the same path that they went through to help them get to the next step. As typical of twins, there's a very strong passenger-driver relationship. And in this case, because she had a full-time job, she did not have the time to research the adoption. And I was still raising my family of four, so I was home during the day, and I did have the time. So we worked that out between us. We shared all the search costs, and we talked about every decision point. But I was the one in the trenches digging it out. And consequently, I think because of those efforts, I felt every speed bump and every roadblock a little bit deeper than she did. It's a really an interesting relationship, and not as competitive as you would think it would be. We just seem to figure out what the other needs and what support the other person needs.
Often MPEs will struggle to adjust to different ethnic or even racial identities they discover in the process. This occurred for Julie too.
I grew up in an Irish Catholic family back in the 1950s and 60s. I think most adoptees were put out there as having Irish and German heritage. I was in a lot of Irish festivals and rode in the St. Patrick's Day parade in Chicago. So I embraced being Irish. And when I started on this path of figuring out my family of origin, inwardly, I was a little scared. What am I going to do if I find out I'm not Irish? On all this identification and sense of community that I've experienced, I'm going to have to figure that out. When I found my birth mother, I learned she wasn't at all Irish. She was very German, which may explain why she could keep the secret so well. And she also had Native American ancestry and French ancestry. So I was interested in all of that, but again, really disappointed that where's the Irish? I look Irish. I have fair skin and freckles, and I really felt that I was Irish. And when I did find my birth father and had the confirmation that I was in the right family, I was relieved to find out that not only was I Scotch-Irish, that I was more Irish than my husband and more Irish than I thought that I might be. I also found out that not only was I more Irish, I was also more Native American than I suspected. My birth father was 1/4 Chippewa, and that makes me 1/8 Chippewa Indian. One of the disappointments in being able to identify with that heritage is because my birth father's name is not on my birth certificate, I cannot legally claim to be part of the Chippewa Indian tribe. And I think part of my birth father's reluctance to get to know my sister and I had to do with his upbringing. He grew up very poor on the edge of this reservation in northern Minnesota. And I don't think he was proud of his Native American heritage, that he had risen above that and become somebody and didn't claim it. I've learned a lot from my half-siblings about our family heritage and going all the way back into Canada. My great-great-grandfather married a Chippewa princess, and I have found pictures of her. It's very interesting reading, and I'm still figuring out how I feel about that piece of my heritage that I don't have any identification with other than what I read. So it's a great question, the bewilderment about genealogy.
Part of my work with MPEs is to find the right support system when the family systems can be so volatile. Julie offered her recipe for that support here.
I would definitely encourage any adoptee that's going through this program of search and reunion to find somebody to talk to that don't deny the fact that you're going to need that, because it's not easy, even for people that have good marriages and strong families. You need a professional, a social worker, a therapist, or a support group. And that will make the things that happen to you a little bit easier.
Thanks to Julie for sharing her story and making it easier for adoptees everywhere to find what they're looking for, a sense of self, a sense of family, and a place to belong. You can find Julie's book, Twice a Daughter, at many bookstores and on Amazon.
Sex, Lies, and the Truth is written and produced by Jody Klugman-Rabb and Christina Bryan Fitzgibbons. If you or someone you know would like to be a guest on the show, you can contact us through our website at www.sexliesandthetruth.com.
If you are a fan of Sex, Lies, and the Truth and want to support us, you can do that through Patreon. Patreon is a really cool platform where fans of shows like ours can pledge a small amount each month, even just a few dollars, to support the show. You can find us there at www.patreon.com/sexliesandthetruth.